life.
Love and health.
I'm Christopher Springman, and you're at the crossroads of life, love, and health. The Crossroads. It's an intersection where opportunity meets personal engagement, where we ask the question, which path would you choose? Let's say you're a teenage mother. I would bet that fertility issues wouldn't be at the top of your list of concerns. After all, you just had a baby and, well, that's that. But teenage mothers do grow up, and their children have babies. And hey, before you know it, you could become a great-grandmother at age 50. Well, let's do the math. You have a baby at 13, and your daughter has a child at 17. So that adds up to 30, and if her daughter has a child 20-something years later, it's not unreasonable to become a great-grandmother at 50-ish. But for Belva Williams, great-grandmother-in-waiting, it wasn't about the math. It was more complicated than that. It was about fertility, as I discovered in a chance encounter on a flight to Chicago. We were sitting across from each other on a Southwest flight, and I was reading Essence magazine. Now, I'm an average middle-aged white guy, and Belva, whom I had not yet met, is an African-American. I felt the heat of her stare as I read an Essence story on uterine fibroids, an enormous problem in the black community. And, well, Belva's curiosity must have gotten the best of her, as she graciously introduced herself and said, Why are you reading our magazine? Well, I told Belva that it was my magazine, too, that I was a subscriber and frequently had the health features editor of Essence on our show, Life, Love, and Health. And besides, I was going to Chicago to do an interview with an OBGYN about uterine fibroids. And, oh my goodness, I dropped the bomb. Boom! Uterine fibroids. And for the remainder of the trip, I heard the entire fascinating Williams family medical history. Belva told me that her 22-year-old granddaughter Latifa, the first woman in three generations to be married before having a child, had been struggling with fertility issues and couldn't carry to term because of fibroids. In fact, Latifa's doctor suggested a hysterectomy. Belva must have seen that skeptical look on my face, and she leaned in real close and asked, "What do you think she should do?" That's the magic moment of convergence, when a chance encounter becomes an opportunity for engagement. So I suggested that a second opinion to a very decisive, very final hysterectomy would be a good idea. Mrs. Williams sat there silently, and she knew what I meant. So I suggested I'd look into it and get back to her. Well, she put out her hand, asked for my business card, and said, "That's wonderful, thank you, Mr. Springman. I'll call you tomorrow, because I don't want my baby's daughter not to have a child of her own. Do you understand what I mean?" "Oh, yes, Mrs. Williams. I know what you mean." Well, the next day, I interviewed the OBGYN about fibroids, and Mrs. Williams' concerns and questions were firmly on my mind. Besides, what would you do if someone reached out and asked you for help? Here's a portion of our show that provided the answers for Mrs. Williams. Life.
Love. And health.
I'm Christopher Springman, and you're listening to Life, Love, and Health Special Edition. Do you have a PhD, a pelvic health disorder? As a woman, it's important that you understand all the treatment options available, including minimally invasive procedures. We spoke with Dr. Charles Miller, an OBGYN and president of the AAGL, the professional organization of gynecologic endoscopic surgeons, to discuss the findings of a recent survey that indicated that few women were aware of minimally invasive treatment options. You live in Chicago. Chicago is a very diverse city with large communities of color. Women of color, yes, traditionally, or historically, I'm trying to find the right word here, have been, and this is my word, plagued by uterine fibroids. This has been an enormous problem that in some cases is dealt with a hysterectomy.
Right.
What would you say to women of color who are concerned about uterine fibroids that essentially inhibit their ability to become pregnant, and fibroids that are familial? I believe they run in families. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
What would you say to women these days who are concerned about that, and of course their reproductive potential, about what you can do for them?
Well, that's an excellent question. And the fact is, Christopher, it's obvious that you know what you're talking about.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
No, the fact is that if one looks at a population, if one Asian has a fibroid, four Caucasians have fibroids, 9 women of African ancestry have fibroids. So it's 9-4-1 in terms of a predilection. And it is genetic related. You are absolutely right. If you look at the various techniques, minimally invasive techniques at the present time, uterine artery embolization, uterine fibroid embolization is not valid for people interested in future fertility. But the bottom line to this is, so if a woman is interested in pregnancy, the only option she has with uterine fibroids, if the fibroids are impacting the canal of the uterus. So fibroids on the outside are not problematic. On the inside, they can definitely lead to problems with miscarriage, with premature labor, with abnormal presentation, or can keep women from getting pregnant. If that is the case, these patients would become excellent candidates for a laparoscopic approach to myomectomy through the tiny incisions, or hysteroscopic approach to myomectomy, going directly through the through the vagina, through the cervix, into the uterus. But again, it's dependent on the size, location, and number of fibroids.
I should think that your goal is to preserve women's fertility and their ability to have children. Yet there are many women out there who've heard all these stories about hysterectomies as the solution to fibroids. And I would suspect that there are many women, especially women of color, who may be reluctant to seek medical care because they're concerned that this is the only option that will be offered to them. And you've undoubtedly, in the course of your work, preserved the fertility of many, many women. I'm sure you're very proud of that.
Very, very proud of that. That's probably the outside of the birth of my children, that's probably the greatest thing I've ever been able to do in my life. You are right. Very proud of that.
Life.
Love. And health.
Now, remember that Mrs. Williams said that she'd call me. Well, she did, and I told her that I had some good news, that I had found a doctor whom I believed shared her concerns and values about hysterectomy and preserving fertility. And off she went, with that name and number in hand, armed with some very valuable information to benefit her family. What happened? Well, here's the rest of that story. Now, I'll be honest with you, I lost track of Mrs. Williams a couple years ago, didn't hear from her again, and went about my business. But one day I received a note from her. Gosh, it's beautifully addressed by hand and inside a card that simply said, "Thanks for all of your help, and especially for keeping your promise to me. Love, Belva." And there was a picture enclosed. And standing from left to right was Mrs. Williams, her daughter, her granddaughter Latifa, now 22, with her husband, who was holding, that's right, Mrs. Williams' new great-grandson. What did I do? Well, I listened and carried Mrs. Williams' message to someone I thought could help. The rest was up to her. And that family picture, I guess it says it all, doesn't it? About people taking action, doing good, making a difference, where it counts the most and lasts the longest. I'm Christopher Springman, and you're at the crossroads of life, love, and health, where opportunity meets personal engagement and intervention, where we ask the question, which path would you choose?
Life.
Love. And health.